Mike Piazza, Miller Park, June 6, 2006.
Well, listen, what I wanted to get at here was everybody knows your history, you know, 62nd round draft choice. Now you're generally considered the greatest hitting catcher in the history of the game. What would you hope that your legacy would be when you finally retired?
Well, I mean, much like my father before me. I mean, my father came out the Army, you know, in the late 50s. He was going to serve in Korea, but he got a really bad foot infection and had to go back to basic training, and then eventually got stationed in Germany and was in artillery, and then he drove, he was a corporal, I believe, and he then was driving the commander around and did that type of duty in West Germany. And the point is, I mean, he came out of the Army with just, you know, discharge, a couple hundred dollars discharge pay, and, you know, built a new car dealership organization. We have around 12 dealerships now, and real estate and other odds and ends businesses and things. And the fact that I could have easily gone into that business, but I didn't want to. I mean, I wanted to play baseball, and I kind of wanted to forge my own sort of identity in a way, which was nothing wrong. I mean, my brothers are working in the business, and they're really happy, and they're doing a great job of expanding it. So he's giving them the ball, and they're taking it to another level. But I love baseball, and the fact that I just want to kind of relay to people that you don't always have to be the most highly regarded athlete or highly regarded student or anything like that. You can still make your way, and just discipline, determination, faith in God, you know, faith in your family, support. I had a great support system. They gave me a lot of it. Excuse me. It's a fine. Anyway, so I guess what I'm just trying to say is that you don't always have to, you know, take the path. I mean, of you don't always have to be the most highly exalted person in your field. You could forge your own way through discipline and hard work, and you might have to work harder than the next guy. You may have obstacles, physical obstacles or whatever. I mean, but you have to sometimes work twice as hard, and I enjoy doing it as well. Find pleasure in that, because the discipline and the work makes you appreciate it more, and I think keeps you more grounded and makes you more able to deal with either, you know, fortune or fame or anything that that comes your way. Just realize it's very generic. You know, it's not a very sincere type of thing, and it allows you to live your life a little bit more grounded, you know.
Well, after all these years, I mean, you've proven so much. What motivates you to keep playing at this point?
Because I enjoy it. I still enjoy competing. I enjoy coming to work. I mean, you know, the fact that we have a good bunch of guys here, and they're a lot of fun. That my wife supports me. I've been married now just over a year, about a year or 3 months, and she's very, you know, the fact that she's supporting me, and just that I got the whole rest of my life to be retired from baseball, so I kind of want to go out on my own terms, but also, you know, play ball to enjoy it. I mean, I think when I was younger, I was kind of chasing that carrot, trying to establish myself, and you're chasing fame and fortune and all these things. And then once it comes your way, you're like, is this it? And I wanted to kind of reconnect with game on a basic level. And this year I'm allowed to, you know, I've been able to do that. So it's been the best of both worlds for me.
When you were a kid, was there anybody you idolized in baseball?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up watching the Philadelphia Phillies teams in the late 70s, early 80s. They had really good ball clubs. I went to the World Series, won the World Series in 80, went to the World Series in 83, went to the playoffs in 77, 78. They had a good team, and I enjoyed watching them. And they had good ball players, and, you know, that's where I kind of really fell in love with the game. I remember my dad used to have pictures of him taking my brother and I down to Fan Appreciation Day, and going down and meeting the players, getting autographs. It was fun. I mean, I enjoyed it, and that's what allowed me to watch the game and become sort of really interested in baseball.
But there was no one in particular.
I mean, like Mike Schmidt, you know, from a standpoint of that, I was on the third base side, and he was playing third, and he was obviously, you know, the all-star third baseman, you know, great hitter, a lot of power. I enjoyed watching him. I picked up a lot of his mannerisms, you know, and it was, he was a great ball player. He was a great fielder and great hitter. And so, you know, he was kind of just the guy I used to watch the most. But I used to like to watch,
I remember watching Lou Brock his last few years when he came in, and other players that, you know, Johnny Bench and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. You're part of a long legacy of Italian-American catchers.
Mm-hmm.
How familiar are you with some of your predecessors?
Well, I know it was when I was close to winning. I mean, I hit 356 one year, 361 one year, and the fact that I finished third in the batting title those 3 years shows that I really wanted to be the first catcher since Ernie Lombardi to win a batting title. And that was something that was brought to my attention. I never figured hitting 360 as a catcher would be finished third, but I guess in the day and age of having Tony Gwynn, you know, in that that era that I played in the 90s was just, you know, in a way, I'm a little bit disappointed, but in a way I'm not, because I know I was beaten by the best. You know what I mean? It was like, I can't begrudge her. I can't, you know, it was just something that wasn't meant to be. I always look at what I have instead of what I don't have. And I think the fact that, you know I lost out 2 out of 3. I mean, I had a really good chance in those mid-set 90s years where I think I was as good as any hitter in the game.
Was that the, you know, is that the highest batting average by a catcher?
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. Since Bill Dickey, I believe.
It's 362.
Yeah.
That's right.
I was, I think I tied him, or, you know, it was around that, but I had, you know, 40 home runs on 24 RBIs. So I had the triple crown of the second half that year. Still finished third in MVP, or second in MVP voting, which.
Well, it's cool that you're aware of Ernie Lombardi,
mm-hmm.
who won 2 batting titles.
No.
First Italian to win the MVP award
in
1938. What other catchers are you aware of?
Well, I know, of course, Yogi Berra, Italian-American catcher. And let me see. I know there was, I can't quite remember the other guy's name that comes to mind. What was the other, Lazzeri, he was an outfielder, I believe.
Lazzeri was second base.
Second baseman.
Right.
And I remember the guy, Tony Caligliero, got hit in the eye, right?
Oh, yeah.
It was tough. I mean,
you know, you mentioned Yogi Berra, and today a lot of people forget about how great he was. But there's some similarities, I think, in the sense that everybody told Yogi he'll never be a major player.
Yeah.
You're too small.
Sure.
Too awkward. You know, don't have plate discipline. And you had to overcome that same kind of doubt, obviously, through hard work and dedication.
Yeah, it's something I appreciate. I think the key I always want to say, when you have that sort of, you got to welcome that. You have to sort of use that as, I never really took spite, or I never really wanted to prove anybody wrong, or kind of, I'd do it from a bad place. I wanted to do it from the fact that I felt like I really could compete in the major leagues. So the fact that I think, you know, I didn't really channel that, and so I'm going to prove everybody wrong. I just went like, wait a minute, you know, I feel like I can compete. I feel like I have the ability. And the fact that I didn't let anybody discourage me, because it's easy when you have people in the higher-ups or experts, scouts telling you that you should go back to school, and coaches telling you, you know, you should pursue your major league dream. But, you know, I mean, and then I was fortunate. You know, I really did. I'm appreciative to Tommy Lasorda, because I did do a lot of the work, you know, but he helped me, and he gave me an opportunity. I think he really sort of went to bat for me to when I finally proved that I could be a major league player. He basically said that, you know, that gave me that opportunity to be the everyday catcher in 1993, which Mike Socia, who was another, you know, Italian-American catcher as well, so coming to replace him was really, not replace him, but obviously following his footsteps was difficult, because he was a very popular player with the Dodgers. So, you know, I felt some pressure in that, but I tried to just be myself and not necessarily, you know, worry about those expectations.
You've heard a certain amount of criticism over the years of the defensive work. How do you respond to that?
Well, number one, I think I should be flattered, because I think there's very few catchers or very few players that I think have been a little bit under the scrutiny that I have been. I think only because of the fact that the glory defensive catching is purely throwing. Throwing guys out is like the one thing of catching that's sort of the only, you know, if you catch a good ball game, or if you block a ball, or if you catch a pop-up, or if you make a good play, or if you, you know, call a good ball game, those things aren't
boring.
Glory. Yeah, but if you from your knees or something, everyone's like, wow. So the fact that I mean, I'll be the first to admit I haven't been the most prolific thrower, but I don't think I've been the worst thrower ever. So I just think that the fact that I've hit so well made just put more scrutiny on my defense.
Right.
And it's affected me in some ways. It's in sometimes throughout my career, I've been a little bit self-conscious of it, and I've tried to work. It hasn't like I haven't been applied myself, but this year I feel like I've been playing a lot better and throwing a little better. And, you know, the numbers aren't, you know, prolific, but, you know, I feel like if I go out and catch a game and win the game, that's all you can ask for. I mean,
so are you comfortable going back to catching after the experiment at first?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that experiment. Obviously, it wasn't, a lot of it was out of my control. But I, you know, wanted to be a good soldier and a good a good teammate, and it was something I was asked to do, and I did it. I did the best of my ability, but, you know, after being non-mobile, you know, for 12 years behind a plate, and then asked to be mobile, was a little bit difficult. But, you know, I worked hard at it. It was frustrating because, you know, you feel like you're learning at a big league level, which is very difficult because, you know, the expectations are high. But, you know, again, I made the most of it. You know, I don't think it was necessarily a bad thing. But, you know, what are you going to do? I think the Mets, you know, we're looking for some solutions that were a little bit shortcut at the time. But that's fine.
When we were in Orlando, we talked a little bit about Italy. Was that your first trip? You went in 2002 because you were on the MLB. That was your first trip to Italy?
I went to Rome for a few days, and was great. I enjoyed it very much, and may just kind of whet my appetite a little bit to go back
and reconnect. And back since,
I've been back since several times. Went to Sicily, went to Rome and Florence again. Went to Portofino and Santa Margherita, and then I went to Parma. Took a train from Bologna to Milan. Enjoyed Milan as well. I think Northern Italy is beautiful. A little bit more industrial. Not as rustic or not as agrarian, but beautiful as well. And the people were really sweet and nice. And I've met some Italian nationals in the States who are very proud of. I've always looked for that sort of bridge between the aristocratic Italians of state and then sort of the, you know, the people who migrated here in the late 1800s. Yeah, our generation, you know. And I think, it's just one of those things that it was just evident that the people were outgrowing the country, and that to come to the United States, it was, you know, the people who stayed were obviously the more aristocratic, the dukes and the families that were more from the educated class, and then the farm workers and the laborers and everyone kind of came here. And I think it's interesting. I mean, there are differences in the regions of Italy because the country was only incorporated in 1870. They were a bunch of city-states, so... But I think it's fascinating, and the fact that I've reconnected with a lot of Italian nationals who come to the United States now in a second wave, because it's so much opportunity here economically, that even now some of the families that were there from the textile businesses, they're trying to expand their businesses to the United States. So it's interesting, and I think the fact that a lot of them are very proud of us in some ways is gratifying.
Did you meet any relatives in Shaka?
We're still on the search form. We do believe we know they exist, but you know, we know we have cousins over there, distant cousins, because I know my father. We did some interesting. We had to trace lineage through the team, and my mom actually has a lot of interesting information we found out, and I think I can't remember the name. I wish I had the name. I could give you my mom's number and you could trace it a little bit, because We had a name of what do you call it? My grandmother's maiden name was something like Sigranzi. It was a beautiful name, and they changed it to Sagrants. But her name was. I was like, how would you change that name? It was such a beautiful Italian name. And my uncle, my dad was telling Uncle Sammy, who was my grandmother's brother, was. They had the name, and it was very interesting. Very, very.
Sagrant. How do they spell that?
Sagrants or Sagrant? I'll find out the name because my mom has it. I can get your number.
Okay.
Give a call. That was the American version.
Sure. Nothing to worry.
It was a beautiful Italian name, which I was like, now you're like, why would you change it? But I guess because of the.
It was similar.
Yeah.
Now, you've mentioned the baseball academy, that when you retire, you want to go back and work.
We might go this year, actually. I might go over there this year. But I'd like to. I think it's. I think you have to be realistic about baseball in Italy. I mean, I just talked to. I became befriended one of the players on the team. He's from Rimini. The hell is this? Alessandro, my age three. Yeah, I just saw him in Phoenix. He's playing with the Cubs.
Right, you know where he's.
He's in extended spring training, and I think he's going to play in short season A ball this year.
He's a good kid.
And yeah, he's a real nice guy. Yeah. And I just saw him. He came to the games in Phoenix. We had a drink at the hotel, the team hotel. Yeah, so it was good to see him. And they were telling me it was hysterical. They were saying that you know, his roommates who are American, all kids from Florida, actually. Was telling me that they were doing something, and he was in the shower, and he came out in his robe, and you know, so he's very, you know, upscale, you know, very upper class Italian kid, very very sweetheart kid though, but he's got good ability. I mean, he's young, he's 20, so we'll see. I mean, I think you have to be realistic. I think once you can get one or two, to maybe get to the big leagues, it would kindle some interest over there, and slowly, you know, like I said in the press conferences, get a grassroots, you know, sort of movement going. But, you know, I don't know, it'll be the powerhouse of the Dominican Republic, because a lot of those kids there play out of sheer desperation.
That's right.
So it would be a little bit different, but I think you could have a couple players get there. It would create some interest.
It's kind of cool. It's like completing the circle. You know, with his Italians after his grandparents immigrated.
Oh, you're right. It's more things change and more things come around. They kind of just change in different ways. But it would be an interesting. But I think the fact that, we grew up in the United States and we love this country, but I do believe we're very proud of our ancestry and the fact that Italy's a country of historical tradition and things like that. I think it's something that we find very fascinating. That's what I find fascinating. That's why I like to read that.
By the way, I was they mentioned it yesterday. I'm starting to write this, the history of Italians in baseball, and obviously you've already established yourself as one of the great players of Italian heritage in the history of baseball. If I say that to you, does that have any meaning to you? I mean, do you think of yourself in those terms, or can you?
Well, my personality isn't such to really kind of put myself in history. I kind of prefer to wait till after my career, you know, because I think the length of a career is just as important as what you accomplish in it, too. So, but I mean, being Italian, of Italian descent, and knowing how people, especially Italian, other Italian Americans, respond to that is very flattering. And obviously, there's a tremendous amount of predecessors that have, you know, great tradition. Joe DiMaggio, obviously, and Tony Quagliarella. You know, and among others that are, you know, very have contributed a lot to baseball.
Do people, Italian Americans, say that to you? I mean, do they acknowledge that they're proud of you because you're in that league?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's funny because I think on what Joe DiMaggio kind of stood. What he stood for as far as being Italian, it was good and bad, because he set such a precedent that I think is almost impossible to measure up to as far as popularity and talent and legacy, and obviously being the Yankees, being a Yankee Clipper and winning the championships. And I think Italian Americans are probably ever searching for that next, you know, Joe DiMaggio, and I think it's almost impossible to live up to those expectations. Obviously, people have tried, or at least, you know, kind of. I've heard many prominent Italians that I've met through my fortunate playing in L.A. that a lot of them have said that, you know, they try to put me in somewhat of that category. But you know, I'm just kind of besieged by humility. I kind of place myself in there. I can only say I'm very much inspired by Joe DiMaggio, and hopefully
If people do try to kind of slightly put me in a category, it's very flattering.
Now, were you, as a kid growing up and starting to play baseball, were you aware of that then, of a Joe DiMaggio as an Italian ball player? Or is that something you become aware of because people would mention you in the same breath?
Yeah, well, ironically, obviously my father, you know, Joe DiMaggio was very much an influence on my father. But on the same note, my father was very much enthralled with Ted Williams. So so my father, even though was had a lot of pride being Italian American, was very much in support of Joe DiMaggio. And then he always debated, you know, if Joe DiMaggio played in Fenway, he'd have a lot more home runs. If Ted Williams played in Yankee Stadium, he'd have a lot more home. So there was always that sort of debate in that era. But I think you know, when I was growing up, my dad was so much kind of taken in Joe DiMaggio legacy that he. It wasn't even so much baseball-wise. I mean, he had this total off-the-field legacy, you know, with the Marilyn Monroe and the showgirls and being in New York. And back then, too, your private life wasn't scrutinized as much, and it was more of a romantic type you know, people kind of romanticized about the off-field, you know, sort of exploits of the players now, where it's more scrutinized.
Yeah, more of a myth.
Yeah, and you could do things. I mean, you could date showgirls, and there wasn't as much negative sort of, you know, typecast.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Today, it's more of a, you really have to watch it yourself, and you have to be careful because there's a lot of people that are trying to kind of exploit your private life. So it's kind of a you know, catch 22 nowadays. You want to. I mean, for me, I enjoy living in Los Angeles and being single and things like that. But it's also a catch 22 where you can get in trouble if you're not careful.
You're in a fishbowl, obviously.
Yeah,
You would be here.
Yeah, but I think obviously the eras are so different now that back then, you know, that whole life was, you know, just it was left alone. The media wasn't out to exploit athletes, and they had probably just as many problems as they do today off the field. So,
So
it's a little bit different, and you just deal with it. It's not a complaint on my part. It's just the way you have to deal with it.
Yeah. How come your dad was interested in Williams? Where did your dad grow up?
Well, my dad grew up in Norristown, Pennsylvania, suburban Philadelphia. And, you know, I think it was because my dad was left-handed, you know, and so he had that, you know.
Did he play ball?
My dad was a left-handed second baseman, which obviously wasn't very, he knew that his career was not going to take off.
How far did he go?
Well, he played, he played a little bit semi-pro ball, and then he played in the Army. Played for a lot of teams in the Army because he was in Korea and Germany obviously, he had aspirations of playing professionally, but never, you know, because of his situation, he had to work, you know, support his family, you know, and he is a kid. He just was so, you know, into working, and when he got out of the Army, he had to work. I mean, he couldn't afford to play ball, and it wasn't a luxury that he could do. So I think, obviously, he's living through me a lot, you know.
Were his folks born in Italy or in the States?
Yeah, well, his parents... We're born in Italy. I think they immigrated here in the teens. My father is from Shaka. My grandfather is from Shaka. He just passed away last year.
From Shaka?
Yeah, and my grandmother is from Naples.
Yeah.
So actually, back in those days, it was very rare for a... you're almost from a different country if you didn't marry outside of your region in Italy.
I know.
And so it was very bizarre. It's very different. Well, my grandfather, he took a lot of criticism from his family
marrying
a foreigner from Naples.
Right.
And they met actually kind of sort of in transit immigrating to the United States. So, yeah, so it was pretty pretty interesting. And then obviously my father was a little bit scrutinized for marrying a Slovak, you know. But he met my mother in... my mother and my father were from parallel, kind of neighboring towns. And my dad was from Norristown, my mother was from Phoenixville. And Phoenixville was mainly Slavic, Czechoslovakian, German descent. And Norristown was mainly Italian, Irish sort of descent. So they met, and obviously, it was about the time that those sort of stereotypes were being kind of lightened as far as, you know, you have to marry an Italian girl.
Right.
You're Slavic, have to marry you. And obviously my mother took some ribbing too from her family. So it's kind of nice. And I think that's obviously the melting pot of this country, that that was about the time where those sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Those sort of taboos. Yeah, those taboos were lightening and lifting.
Right. Have you ever been to Italy?
No, as a matter of fact, I was asked by baseball to do a tour last year, and I couldn't fit into my schedule because I usually go to Japan. Mm-hmm. That's just a lot of too much travel for me, especially after a long season. So,
you know if you have relatives?
I do. I still have relatives in both places, and so
I'll
eventually one day.
If you have a chance to go to Sicily, I've been to Shaka. Mm-hmm. I lived in Sicily for a year.
Oh, really?
My grandfather's family is Neapolitan.
Wow.
I was born in Abruzzo, but I lived in Sicily for a year. Spent many times in Shaka.
Wow.
This town. So if you
understand. There's a lot of...
Especially if you got relatives.
There is. I have to kind of confer with my family and get sort of that... see if there's any names or that.
So, I was talking to Mike Socia yesterday. He went in January to Italy. And for him, he said it sort of reawakened his ethnic identity.
Yeah,
and
I think it is.
Family there—that's what happened to me.
Yeah, I think it's something obviously I want to do very soon. And now that, because ironically, because of the media now being a lot more worldwide, I have friends and associates of mine who have been to Italy, and they said that I have a very, very big following of fans over there. Because of baseball's becoming a lot more popular over there, and obviously it's always going to be second to soccer.
Right.
But American baseball is becoming more popular, and you're seeing a lot more followings. Guys like myself, Craig Biggio, and Italian, American players that are becoming a lot more. Because my housekeeper, as a matter of fact, her best friend or ex-roommate went to Italy and is doing a job there. And she's telling me that the family she stays with, all the kids are Piazza nuts. And they have posters, and they follow baseball, and they're like, Piazza, Piazza. And so
it's nice that you've got a name that works in both languages.
Yeah, it is. It's very flattering. And I'll tell you what, I honestly thought that one day if baseball were to be in the Olympics, I often thought, and I've questioned that, how kind of interesting it would be if a couple of the American players that are Italian descent kind of get dual passports and play for Italy. I think that would be better. Because, number one, it would make the team a little bit more competitive.
Right.
And, number two, it would probably stimulate that much more interest in baseball. And that's an idea I kind of threw around, but I don't know if it would be well-received or not. But I'm sure baseball, hopefully before I retire, baseball will be in the Olympics, and that will do a lot for the promotion of the game overseas.
So obviously your dad encouraged you to play ball, I would assume.
Yeah, he was crazy. I mean, he bought me a batting cage at 11 and pitching machine, and he basically, with times I didn't want to go out there, kind of forced me to go out there and practice at least a little bit, and today, I think, because of such a liberal feeling of kids allowing them to do what they want and not push them in a direction, he was very stern about, knew that I had talent. And, so I'm only different sometimes on that. I feel if kids have a talent, they need to be pushed, because kids sometimes are a little bit too rebellious. I was, like any kid, and I feel that they need to be pushed in a direction if they have a talent. And now, looking back, I have a lot to thank, of my dad for being very stern in making me practice and allowing me to. And even if I never made it to baseball, it taught me responsibility, it taught me discipline,
right.
It taught me how to apply myself to something.
You talked about Joe DiMaggio. Did you have any sense, or do you know of Italian Mexicans in baseball before Joe? There weren't that many.
Yeah, there weren't really that many, huh?
Lissari, Rossetti, did those names mean anything to you? Probably not as many.
Not as, obviously I'm not as aware of those names and things, but there was, for me, my father growing up, the biggest was obviously DiMaggio, and then the boxer,
Rossetti.
Marciano.
Yeah, he was
you know
heroes.
So, because it was kind of dual type of the other sports too, kind of brought into knowing the other sports as players that came in, football and whatnot, stuff like that. So
with your contemporary football players today, do you have any sense of commonality with them, other Italian Americans, or not?
Well, I kid around all the time, like with Craig Biggio and John Cangelosi and guys such as that, that are very obviously aware being Italian and stuff. But from what I understand, I think there's an Italian in the minor leagues who's very talented. I read that somewhere.
Mike was telling me about that.
Yeah, I think it's Seattle or Toronto, one of those teams. He's from Italy, and he's an Italian who's very talented. I guess he's doing real well, so it's interesting.
A lot of the players that I talk to, your generation, don't have a great sense of ethnic identity. If I talk to Chef Cirillo, Mark Loretta, guys like that.
Yeah, I think in the last probably 30 or so years in this country, that sort of has kind of dissipated because of obviously now, the name, the males are carrying on the name, but as they're marrying more kind of ethnically, as far as marrying Irish and German girls and things like that. So plus the families are moving more, they're losing a sense of, whereas I'm, East Coast based, but now even I live in Los Angeles, and so it's kind of you lose a little bit. You become more American, sort of just American in belief and things like that. So I think it's, in one way, I guess it's good, and in one way it's not good, because you are losing track of your heritage. So, and then obviously now, both my dad's parents died last year, so they were the last connection, right, so to speak, with the old world.
Do you ever take any ribbing for being Italian from fellow ball players?
Well, yeah, there's always ribbing and stuff like that. And
they use any I ethnic terms toward you?
No, nothing negative. Yeah. I think those sort of kind of disappeared back in the 50s and 60s. Obviously my name, God. More from the fans, with the pizza type of thing.
Really?
And I try to tell them, I said, there's actually a name in Italian that's pizza, which is spelled exactly like pizza.
Right.
So it's so rudimentary of people make fun of my name called pizza.
You're talking about opposing?
Yeah, more the fans, yeah.
Rib you to get you.
Yeah, so it's very, it's almost, infantile to some degree. That was back when I was a kid. I would get, Raz for my name being, Piazza. I would say pizza.
Oh, look at my name, Baldessaro.
They can pronounce it. Yeah,
right, exactly. And I'll tell you, when I was a kid, I didn't have much ethnic identity. I wanted to be American.
Sure.
So when I grew up in the 50s and so forth, it wasn't chic to be ethnic.
Sure.
It was only until later that I gained that sense of pride.
I think it's almost like... there's always that opposite of what you're trying to achieve, when you first come here and back. Even my dad said, it's like he would be called, Dago and WAP and when he was a kid, all the Irish kids would want to fight him, and he'd have to fight him every week, and he would try so hard to assimilate himself to be an American, and then when he grew up and then started losing that sort of ethnic identity, then he would strive to become more that. Well,
right.
He always tells me now, I remember this Italian-American group gave me this award, Brian Piccolo Award, and I told the group, said it was funny, the group, I told in the banquet, I was giving a little bit of history of my family, and I said, I'm only half Italian. I said, that my mother is Slovak. And it was like this deafening silence over the crowd that, and my dad's like, what did you do? And I said, well, it's your fault. You're married to Slavic, So, but then, what's really ironic, too, is I started researching a little bit about, the history of the conquest of Sicily and knowing how Sicily was one of the most conquered part regions of the world. First it was obviously Roman, and then like the barbarians came in, the Nordics came in, and then the Moors came in, and then the French. It was so the Greeks, obviously, and then when the Romans had their empire, the Romans went out and actually into the Slavic regions. So there's a lot of people in Yugoslavia and Poland and Czechoslovakia and Slovakia who have Italian blood.
Right.
So I think in that whole region, there's all kinds of cross sort of relation, you know, kind of you know, closeness in the races, or at least
it's neat that you know that history about Sicily.
Yeah, I started research. Yeah, it's very interesting. And a matter of fact, there's this one section of Sicily. It's called Icarus or Icarai, or one of the. It's a small town, and it's actually named after Icarus, Greek mythology, and the local dialect is Greek.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, there's a tremendous amount of.
There's also a town called Tiana degli Albanesi, which is Albanian.
Yeah.
They still have the Orthodox Church there rather than the Roman Catholic.
Which is unheard of in Italy.
Right.
And actually, you know, Mario, I've done this deal with Michael Andretti, who's a really good friend of mine, and his father, Mario, is actually from Yugoslavia. Or the, Mario Andretti is from.
Right on the.
The part where Yugoslavia was.
Near Trieste.
So it's very interesting.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of, you know, sort of. And obviously, in Italy, there's like Northern Italians are almost like, you know, completely different than Sicilians. So, because a good friend of mine is Fabio Lanzoni, who's the model Fabio, he's from Milan. And so, you know, it's almost like he's blonde, German, Northern Italian descent.
But, you know, you go to Sicily, you'll see blondes and redheads
because
of all those races and ethnic come through there. Because your name is always associated with Tommy Lasorda.
Sure.
And who is, I guess, one of the very proud Italian-Americans.
Yeah.
I mean, he really wears it on his sleeve.
Yeah, he does. He does. And not only that, he wears it, he's Abruzzese.
Is he?
Yeah, Abruzzese are, you know, the best.
Well, he says that?
Yeah. He'll
love me.
That's his thing, yeah.
Obviously, I'd like to talk to you. How would you recommend getting in touch with him?
I would try through the Dodgers. A gentleman in the plaid shirt right there is a publicist. Sean, he's a publicity guy. He could probably set that up very easily.
Great. He is your godfather, literally, right? I mean, that's...
Actually, no. The real story is that my father and Tommy were very close growing up. My Tommy was older than my father a little bit, and they were very good friends from Knoxtown, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And then when Tommy went off to the minor leagues to play, and my father went to the army and whatnot, they always kind of maintained a friendship, kept in touch. And when Tommy came back in the winter, you know, my dad, they would go out to lunch and whatnot. So the story is it kind of got misconstrued, and I'm not the most you know, I wasn't into setting the record straight. I really didn't. It didn't matter to me.
Right.
But this thing started perpetuating that, you know, I was Tommy's godfather. But in actuality, my youngest brother, Tommy, was named in honor of Tommy. He was born in 81 after the Dodgers won the World Series. So Tommy said, I want to be Tommy's godfather. So then Tommy was my youngest brother, Tommy's godfather.
Okay.
So it's pretty funny. I keep getting, actually my uncle, Bud, on my mother's side is my real godfather. He keeps, you know, kind of saying, hey, I'm the real godfather. but it's something I'm very proud of. Obviously, there aren't too many Italians in the league now, but it's very interesting, and I've become very sort of interested in obviously looking in the history and the descent of, as a matter of fact, I was given the Italian-American Sports Hall of Fame is in Chicago.
Sure.
And I was given the award of Professional Athlete of the Year. I think it was 94 or 93, one of those years. And I went out there and looked at...
Nice setup.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Well, Tommy is very closely associated with that.
Very close, and obviously they have a Joe DiMaggio, I think, whole section on that.
Yeah.
So
the statue, I think.
It's huge.
Yeah.
So, obviously, I mean,
Have you met?
I've met Joe many times. Joe, needless to say, at times is very nice, and at times he's
does he say things to you about
Joe DiMaggio
being Italian?
Oh yeah, Joe was first time I met him, he just told me he was very proud of my accomplishments and to just carry on and play hard.
and you know, I played golf behind him a couple of times. And, he's always been very, very positive.
So he actually spoke to you. I mean, everybody talks about how quiet he is.
Well, at times he's very introverted, you know. Understandably so, because he's extremely, he's probably pestered a lot. You know,
he's really managed to retain, though, that sense, that myth that we talked about.
He does. He has such a, he has an aura about it.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think is impossible. I really don't think it'll ever be achieved again. I really don't, because of the...
well, for what you said.
Yeah.
You'll never have that
absolutely
anymore.
So, but it's honoring, like I said, when people kind of associate me as you know, kind of, I wouldn't necessarily say the next, but it's sort of a disciple or some sort of descendant of the DiMaggio era. So I enjoy that, and it's something I'm very proud of. So, you know, it's kind of it's a nice little kind of aura about my sort of you know, being.
Anything else usually bad that I haven't thought to ask you about?
Well, I think it's something that will probably always be there. And I think now that you're seeing, not just, I think because of your awareness as a race, learn to say, will always be kind of, because obviously other Americans are that much more into their, you know, sort of history. I think
right
now you're going to see a rebirth in the Italian, and it's always kind of been there, and now it's becoming more. And now I even see there's a club in Italy, in Los Angeles, called Sicilians Club of Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
At, you know, Italians will always be very, very proud. Everywhere I go, it's funny. I go to New York and people say, "Hey, Mike, I know your sister from Brooklyn." And I say, "I don't have a sister and I'm not from Brooklyn." So it's kind of funny, you know.
If you're Italian, you must be from Brooklyn.
It's, yeah, exactly. So I think it's quite unique. And I think, obviously, I'd love to go back and visit it very soon. So it would be very interesting.